Unbranded Podcast, and I'm your host, Susie Dean. I'm so grateful to have you on this journey with me. And by journey, it's a journey of self-discovery, of learning about others, reigniting the passions I've long had but never had the time to dive into until now. If you're here, I'm sure you also have an interest in plant magic, living in alignment with nature, spirituality, and the magic that surrounds us that we don't see but works constantly in our lives. And I'm sure you also consider yourself a little bit woo-woo. So sit crisscross applesauce, cleanse your space, set up your diffuser with some oils that uplift you, and enjoy while we have interesting conversations with interesting people on Unbranded with Susie Dean. Hello everyone, it's me, Susie, for a solo episode before we have a couple of weeks, ideally, with if everything is scheduled appropriately and I stay on top of editing, a few weeks of guest conversations. And I wanted to hop on here. I hate saying hop. I really need to stop saying just hopping in. I really wanted to get on here and talk because I'm turning 30 this weekend and I'm really, really excited. So you're listening to this on Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, is my birthday. We are celebrating Hawthorne's birthday, so it's going to be his party and all of our friends are coming over with all of their kids. His real birthday is on September 9th. But mine is on Saturday, and I have absolutely no problem using my birthday for his party. But now I'm going on a tangent. I hope you enjoy. For most of my life, birthdays were a big deal, and not by my choice. Growing up, my mom specifically, and she still does this with Hawthorne, I've had to stop her from doing it with me. My mom had very extravagant birthdays for me because I think this comes from growing up in so much poverty, and she wouldn't mind me saying that. She has a hard childhood, but a beautiful testimony. Her parents were immigrants from Cuba, didn't learn English, a lot of poverty, a lot of trauma. But I think that has definitely informed the way that she has raised me. So growing up, I always had big deal birthday parties, like theme characters were coming. Ariel came. One time I had a like Hawaiian themed party and a hula dancer came and taught us how to hula dance. I had a petting zoo at my house once. And as I grew older, I stopped really wanting to do all of that because it felt like more pressure than what I wanted in a birthday. And what I wanted in a birthday was just to enjoy. And I think it was around high school when I finally put the kibosh on that. And I think it was my freshman year. Yes. This sounds... No. It might have been early middle school when I spent a birthday weekend at a football game. Florida was playing Miami. On September 6th, that was the first time they were meeting in like decades. And I went up for the football game, just me and my dad, and met some friends there that were also going up for the game because it was a big deal game. We won. I believe it was 26-6. But that was just a low-key birthday weekend. Nothing extravagant. A whole bunch of friends from class that I wasn't actually friends with didn't come over to my house. There wasn't panic and frantic cleaning and preparing happening behind the scenes. It wasn't chaos at the house. It was me doing something that I thoroughly enjoyed, watching football at my favorite ever university, being in a town that I had been in love with since the first time I went there, with my dad and nobody else, and just, getting gifts from my parents when I got home. And that was all I needed. And from then on, I tried to lean into that small birthday thing, and until like my 21st birthday. But it was around that time when I think that I started to realize that I just like being alone, and that's fine. And I like keeping things low key, and I don't really like a lot of attention being placed on me in that type of setting. And this goes along with the fact that I grew up in a house where all holidays and major events were very stressful, with a lot of force, like Christmas, Thanksgiving, Easter. There was family that we had to invite over, and we always hosted, and we didn't necessarily want to invite everybody, but we had to because it was family and we didn't want to create drama. And then for like 2 days before the holiday, my mom was cleaning frantically, my dad was not, and she was getting mad at him, and there were fights happening, and food and cooking, and then like the event would happen and fights would happen. And as I got older, I had to start waking up and drinking just to deal with it. And it was so, once I became an adult and grew up and acknowledged that all big events gave me a low-level sense of anxiety, that's when I started to figure out how to handle it. And it was after I graduated college where a friend of mine, who's no longer a friend, I will never tell that story, I don't think, said, "Hey, I really want to celebrate your birthday with you. Whatever you want to do, let me know and we will do it together." And it was the first time where I thought to myself, oh my gosh, what do I want to do? What would make me happy today? Because after all, this is a day for me. This is not a day for everyone else. So, how do I want to spend my birthday? And I ran through a list of everything that I loved. And I said, okay, if you want to do this with me, we're starting with like a 7 a.m. spin class. And then we're going to get juice at the place next door. And then we're going to come home and get dressed and go to the pool. And we're gonna eat Chipotle by the pool. And then we're gonna have a nice sushi dinner. And then we'll watch TV on the couch or something like that. Very, very chill. And ever since then, I have used my birthdays as like a day fully for me, where every decision I make on, where I say, like, mom and dad, you're not coming over today. If you want to celebrate my birthday with me, you can do it at a dinner or something at another time. Robbie, you can play a part in my birthday when I tell you that I want you to. Now that we have a baby, or at least for my last birthday, I was like, Robbie, watch the baby. Today is for me. And every decision I make on that day is very intentional. It is, what do I want to do next? And so I wake up and I say, do I want to sleep in more? Or do I want to get up? Or do I want to read in bed for a little bit? Decide. Do I want coffee? Do I want to go to Starbucks? Or do I want to go to a local place? Do I want a sweet treat? Do I want a pistachio croissant? So, like, minute by minute. And that's how I want to honestly live my life. So all of that to say, I'm trying to figure out how to recreate that this year because Hawthorne's having his birthday on my birthday, and then the day after is Sunday, and Robbie, we all know that I need a weekend day to get my work done, and we can't do that on Saturday, so I'm gonna do that on Sunday. I'm trying to Sabbath on Sundays, but sometimes it doesn't always work out, and I'm trying to learn that God's not mad at me and holding a grudge against me about that. And then we're leaving for Virginia for my cousin's wedding that I haven't written my maid of honor speech for yet. We're leaving on Wednesday. And so then we have Monday and Tuesday. But I can't use either of those days to do my birthday because Robbie's working and I can't have a whole day to myself. And I realize this is all very privileged, I know. But to have one day on my birthday where I can just do whatever I want is the dream for me. So, I'm figuring it out. It's not the end of the world by any means, but I am planning a day, hopefully soon, where I can actually just focus on me, which we don't do a lot as moms. And I could, go into another topic about that, but I do have a purpose for this episode. I follow someone on Instagram named Mary Skinner. You might follow her, Mary CJ Skinner. I started following her at the end of 2020 on TikTok. She did a lot of get ready with me's and talked about her mental health a lot and talked about her relationship with her body. And I thought she was just beautiful and like she's so much more than her beauty. She's like incredibly intelligent and well-spoken and passionate and relatable and vulnerable and candid that I so much appreciated. But it's just, I guess what I'm trying, like her essence, everything that she is from the inside out is just magnetic. And so I've been following her ever since. She's gotten big. She has, well over 1 million followers, fancy brand deals, whatever. But she came out with a podcast a couple months ago, and she recently turned, I don't know, 27, 26, I think, and did 26 lessons I've learned since turning 26, or in turning 26. Maybe she had the podcast longer than a few months ago, because I do also think that she did a turning 25 reason, 25 lessons as I turned 25. So I thought that I would do 30 lessons that I have learned for my 30th birthday. And I will probably never do this again because I already think that 30 is a lot, but I do like to say and acknowledge and give myself credit for the fact that I think that I am pretty wise and give a lot of great advice and have learned a lot of beautiful lessons that I like to impart on others. And this was confirmed to me when I dug deeper into my human design, and I'm a generator. I think I'm a 4-6. Ugh, does that sound right? Where the first half of my life is like divided into three parts, where I'm just like learning everything and being a little bit chaotic. Second part of my life, oh no. The first part of my life, networker, friend. Blah, social butterfly. And then the six is like wisdom. Anyway, I could be getting those numbers totally wrong. I'm not the best on human design. But anyway, I have a lot of pieces of advice to give you that I think you will appreciate. So let's get into it, shall we? Number one, let the car pass. Some of these will be more serious than others, but a couple of memories that live rent-free in my head and pop up every once in a while are times growing up, starting in college, when I was objectively a little bit more of a reckless driver because I'm a petty bitch. And there would be times when I was driving a long trip and someone would try to pass me, and I'd be like, "Who do you think you are trying to pass me? I'm already going 10 miles over the speed limit. I'm not gonna let you pass me." And so they get in the right lane to pass me, and then I speed up, and then they get behind me because they're like, "Oh, she's speeding up. Great, I can go fast now." And then I slow down, and I'd be like, "Oh my God, Susie, why'd you do that?" Or I'd be in a small road space where there may have been a light, a turning lane, regular lanes, and the exit of a shopping plaza, and wouldn't let someone just cut across and get in front of me. Why? Why? Don't waste your time on that. Just let the person pass you. Let the person get in front of you, because there's gonna come a day when you want to get around someone. And there's gonna come a day when you're in a hurry to get to an appointment and you need to cut through some traffic to get into a turning lane. And you're gonna be freaking grateful for the person that lets you go. So pay it forward. And that's karma, baby. Number two, you cannot hate your body into changing. I spent a lot of my life hating my body, wanting to change my body, being ashamed of my body, covering up my body. I remember being in third grade and weighing myself and then going outside to work out and run and then weighing myself again. I remember being in middle school, late middle school, and doing my first no carb Atkins diet. I remember getting ready for my wedding when I was eating meat and dark green vegetables and cheese only, climbing stairs for 2.5 hours every single day, throwing up at night, and just waiting for the weight to be lost. And what happened? I became super inflamed. My body, while it did lower in weight number, never looked the way that I wanted it to. In fact, throughout the course of all of that, my body looked the best, and I always tried to get back to it when I was in my senior year of college. And I was working out, but I wasn't working out to look a certain way. I tried to work out maybe 30 minutes a day, and I wasn't restricting what I was eating. I was having very nourishing breakfasts and eating lunch very mindfully and having dinners and feeling when I was full. And I wasn't drinking, and I was prioritizing sleep, and I was getting up early, and I was sitting outside, and my body was incredible. Flat stomach, hourglass figure, clear skin, great energy, long, bouncy, shiny hair. Because what? Because I was loving my body. I was being intentional with my body. And every other time I look back now, when I tried to get back to that through force, because I was ashamed, because I didn't like what my body looked like, I never got back to it. And I look back on pictures now, I was incredibly inflamed. My face was super round. My voice was different because I was nasally, I assume, because there was so much pressure around my nose because I was so inflamed. My belly was never flat. And I just went into this yo-yo figure thing. And my hair didn't grow for a really long time. And then what happened? I got pregnant. And I gained 70 pounds, my worst nightmare. And I talk about this in another episode. I think it's labeled like I lost 70 pounds. And it's all about how I recovered from my eating disorder through doing that because I realized in pregnancy, when I was so big and I couldn't do the simplest things like sit on my legs, sit crisscross applesauce, bend down without losing my breath. It was then that I realized how much my body could do when it was at a normal weight and how much it did for me before and how much I didn't thank it. And after I gave birth and was cleared for movement, I started moving for joy. I started going on super long walks with my child, not to lose weight, but because I could. And because I could feel my stamina increasing every day. And I would do the row machine because my body could move like that. And I could push my body and be so proud of what it could do. It was like we were working on it together. I was eating all day because I had to keep up my breast milk. And the weight fell off. And I actually didn't even notice, and I didn't think about my weight at all until I stopped drinking, and that's what really took the weight off. And someone made a comment. And my friends, luckily, had known my history, so they were very careful with how they spoke about my body. But someone had said, like, straight up, "Wow, you're skinny. You lost a lot of weight." And I was like, damn it. Like, I was in this bubble. This world of just loving my body and being in communion with my body and not weighing myself and moving for fun and looking forward to my walks and like eating delightful foods and sitting outside and feeling the breeze on my face. And then just being in this joyful place with my body that I had never been in before. And someone popped it. And I was brought back to reality. And ever since then, I have been fighting to maintain that mindset that I had of being in communion with my body. But that was when I learned I didn't try to change my body. I appreciated my body. I thanked my body for all that it could do for me. I looked at it with new eyes. I looked at it with gratitude. I moved it for fun. And what happened? Everything that I wanted to happen when I was instead walking and running upstairs for 2.5 hours, starving myself, throwing up what I ate, and eating no carbs. My hair started growing again. I started glowing. My energy came back. So if you are in a place where you are not loving your body, you're just not going to be able to hate it into submission. Remember, your body is your ally. Your body wants to work and thrive for you, but sometimes it just can't because it's missing something. And sometimes what's missing is your attitude. The way that you think about your body internally is incredibly powerful over how your body actually works. Number 3, listen to people's advice who are in positions that you want to be in. This has been such an obvious piece of advice for me for a long time, and I'm grateful that I was able to integrate it at a young age. I've only recently in the last couple of years realized how many people don't do this. If there's a goal that you have and a person in your life or a person that you know or a person who is in society and has a platform where they talk and they tell you something that they did all the time or something that they do to get to where they are, do that. It got them where they are. And so often I hear people say, yeah, but I don't think I can do that, or I don't have time for that, which sometimes is valid, but most of the time is an excuse. Or I think I can get the same effect doing something else. No. Do what that person you admire says to do. And to be honest, I'm running my own little business with Young Living, and I have brand partners that are under me that ask me for advice, and I guide them, and you know, they're like my responsibility, kind of. I mean, MLMs, you run your own business, whatever, but we're all on a team, and I am walking them through this journey. And there are brand partners where I'm like, you need to step outside of your comfort zone and do X. And for months, they will refuse to do X, and I'll be like, I'm telling you, when you do this, I know that this will happen, and they won't listen to me. And finally, something clicks, which I can't force. That's another lesson, but you can't force when someone will listen to you, but something will happen and they will do the thing that I told them to do, and it'll work the way that I told them that it'll work. And they're like, oh my God, it worked. And I'm like, yeah, no fucking shit, Sherlock. I told you it was going to work. And guess what? It could have worked 6 months ago when I told you to do this for the first time, but you lollygagged. So if someone that you admire or want to be like gives you a piece of advice, no matter how scary it is or how out of pocket or how unlike you it is, do your best to follow through on that as quickly as possible to get to that result as quickly as possible. And in the same vein, lesson number 4, learn from the mistakes of others. Another simple one. What is one of the best ways to avoid heartbreak and hardship in your life? Listen to the mistakes of others. Let others make mistakes for you so that you don't have to make them for yourself. I learned this as a child because my mom and I were incredibly close. She was my best friend, definitely to an unhealthy level. But when it came to talking about boys or dating or sex or, I would say partying, but I never partied in high school, which is, around the time when I was really learning these lessons. She would tell me what to do based on her own experiences. And sometimes I followed through, sometimes I didn't, but I can tell you that I avoided a lot of heartbreak, a lot of hardship, a lot of learning the hard way because my mom learned the hard way for me and told me what to do and what not to do. And so I got to avoid that energy. And one of the lessons that she taught me, that I didn't have to learn myself, I don't know if I would have either way, but I distinctly remember her telling me, yeah, Coke isn't that fun. She said, I've done Coke. It's not that fun. It feels like good, I guess, but it feels like a fake good. So, not worth it. And she told me that. She told me that at a very young age. I appreciate the honesty. And guess what? I never did Coke. I was never offered Coke. And I don't think, maybe I just gave off the vibe at every party that I went to that I was like uninterested in drugs. As a matter of fact, I've never done illicit drugs, mostly because of that. And so, yeah, the end there. List let others make mistakes for you. Let other people learn the hard way for you. It makes your life easier, and we're all about life hacking. Number five, hating your job is no way to live. And we're gonna get serious here because a lot of you listening hate your job right now. And many of you listening are in a job that you hate, but you stay in because you know that it'll look good on a resume. Or you stay in because you have convinced yourself that you don't have skills for another job. Or you stay in because you are, to mildly quote, House of the Dragon. And not really remember the actual quote, but those who watch it will get it. You do not leave because you are creating a window within your own prison instead of trying to leave the prison. Or you're creating a window in your own cell without leaving the cell, something like that. I had my first job working at Charming Charlie in customer service when I was 18. And then I went to college. And I didn't want to get a job, but my parents made me get a job because they had to help pay for like rent. And I reluctantly applied for a job at my apartment complex. And what's wonderful about that? You work at your apartment complex, you get free rent. And I got the job and I worked there all throughout college and I loved it. Loved it. I was a pro at that job. I was the number one. Out of the whole company in the country, I think I was number one or like top three best property tours because I would get ratings from people. And I just loved bonding with every new student that came in that wanted to get an apartment and bonding with my coworkers and with the people that already lived there. And it was just like such a family. And I really didn't. I either didn't mind going to work or I thoroughly enjoyed going to work. And those are some of my fondest memories. But in the middle of that, I, if you recall, spent college with the goal of wanting to get my PhD in counseling psychology. So I did everything that I could to make my resume for grad school look like I had the experience that it would take to succeed in a PhD program for counseling psychology. And so I started volunteering at Shands Hospital on the electroconvulsive therapy unit. I suppose I had done so well with interacting with the patients there that I was offered a job, like a real job at Shands Hospital on the psych unit as a recreational therapy aide that came with a 401k. and it was very part-time, but it was consistent, so I could still keep my job at the apartment complex. And I was like, I mean, there's no question. I have to take this. How many 21-year-olds get a 401k job at a hospital on the psych unit? How well is that going to set me apart on my applications to grad school? Holy moly. And a lot of that also was just like pride. Like my dad always grew up wanting, always raised me wanting to be a doctor, and he called me Dr. Dean all the time. And he also went to the University of Florida, and he also spent time at Shands Hospital, not working there, but like as a patient there. Funny ways. And I had wanted his approval, and I was able to call him and tell him that I was offered a job at Shands Hospital, and he was so proud, and he could tell all of his clients and all of his coworkers and all of his friends that his daughter was in college and was working at Shands Hospital. And that's a theme that continued throughout my life and still kind of does with gaining his approval. But soon, and I still to this day cannot point my finger to why it was so hard. I mean, the obvious reason that this job was so hard for me and why I literally cried on days when I had to go into work, obviously, like I was among chaos. So if you don't know, the electroconvulsive therapy unit is when you hear on movies like electroshock therapy, that's what it was. I promise it's not as inhumane as they set it out to be. It is really a profound form of therapy for people that are in very dire situations where, listen, I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not a medical doctor, but I have watched these sessions happen, and the doctor talked me through it, so I knew what was going on with my patients. And what essentially happens is you have a patient who has severe, severe, severe depression, anxiety, to the point that they cannot live their lives, schizophrenia, psychosis, severe bipolar disorder. Like, this is not something that can just be medicated. This is like beyond. And they go into these sessions, and yes, their brain is shocked, and they have a controlled seizure. And what a low-level seizure, and what this does is it's sort of like pressing the reset button on their brain chemistry. And their brain, the way that I viewed it, was their brain got all like fizzle fuzzly, and then they went into their session, and it settled back, and it settled back a little bit more to what the baseline normal was for that person, little by little. And for a few days after, they were very fuzzy. They had like trouble with memory, trouble focusing, trouble figuring out what was going on. But I can tell you, I was there long enough to see patients from beginning to end, and patients who I saw and met who were suicidal, who did not smile, who refused to shower, who refused to leave their chair, who rolled their eyes when I tried to get them to do an activity with me, would leave smiling, putting makeup on, sharing stories. It really was beautiful. But it is reserved for severe situations. So obviously, like, that's going to be tolling for someone. And even more tolling, like, I would be on these shifts, and we had 10 beds, so that's 10 patients at a time. And there was one weekend in particular where I think we had all beds were filled, like 8 of them were on suicide watch. I think 2 of them, while I was on shift, tried to self-harm. 2 of them had sitters, which were essentially techs that sat with them and made sure that they weren't doing anything bad. Some of these adults were in wheelchairs that they were literally locked in with a table tray in front of them, but locked so that they couldn't get up. There was a person in the actual, like, rubber room who was off the walls. He said that he was a new patient. He said that he traveled from space. And it just was so much. And I would come home and just walk into my apartment in silence and just drink a bottle of wine on the floor. But that's not why. I don't know. I don't think that's why I had such a hard time there. Because I brought so much joy. I also remember, to bring a positive memory to that, I also remember there was one weekend. It was Halloween weekend. Florida always plays Georgia, like, the weekend around Halloween. And it was a Saturday, and I had to work the Florida-Georgia game. So, of course, I arrive, and I put the Florida-Georgia game on in the, common room for us all to watch. I mean, we're in Gainesville. And the game was in Jacksonville. And I dressed up for Halloween, and you know what I was? I was a touchdown fairy, and I wore a Tim Tebow jersey, a tutu on the bottom, and I had a wand, and I think I might have had a crown that I bought in the kids section of Walmart. And every time Florida scored a touchdown, I ran around the psych. Can you just imagine, like, Susie with, like, 8 to 10 psych patients in, like, the depths of depression, like, and psychosis. And I'm just running around, not in a way that is, like, dismissive of their diagnosis, but in a way that is trying to uplift the energy and bring some joy. And every time Florida would score a touchdown, I would run around the whole floor, in down the hallway where all the bedrooms were, in the common area, in the nurse's station, and I would just bounce around and say, "Touchdown fairy, touchdown fairy, touchdown fairy." But it was always, like, very, very hard. And I think it was, I think that I just didn't have any guidance from the person above me, and I kind of felt useless, and I didn't really know what I was doing, and I didn't get the guidance and training on what my role actually was. So I felt very lost, and I felt very useless, and I didn't know what to do with my time, and I was very anxious heading in, and I dreaded the days that I went there, but I pushed through because I knew that it would look so good on a resume. And finally, it got to a point when I was like, it's not worth it anymore. It's not worth it. My frustration and anxiety and sadness and depletion is just not worth the resume booster. And I did force myself to stay there for, like, 8 months because I was like, that's a respectable amount of time. And then I quit. And I felt so much lighter. And I felt so splendid. And that was my first lesson into realizing, if you hate your job and you hate your job so much that it's seeping into your personal life and your relationships and your mental health, it's not worth it. No matter how fancy it's going to look on a resume, it's absolutely not worth it. I learned this lesson a second time, but luckily I quit much sooner when I was in Teach for America. And another prestigious program that I wanted to do and wanted to stick out because I knew that it was a huge resume booster and it was incredibly competitive to get into the program. And I was a 21-year-old thrust into a Title I school in Liberty City, Miami, teaching middle schoolers. And yeah, this little white, bouncy, peppy girl did not thrive there. And yeah, it was not good. And I was not eating, and I was anxious all the time, and I was crying all the time. And this was still in, like, the first year of my relationship with Robbie. And he had a heart-to-heart with me where he was kind of like, you need to quit your job. Or because, like, I don't know how to deal with this anymore. It was almost an ultimatum. And there was one morning in particular where I woke up crying so hard that I popped a blood vessel because I didn't want to go to school. And I was crying on the road, and I left the house crying, and then I was 10 minutes away, and my mom called me in a panic and was like, "Come back. Don't cry on the road. Like, that's dangerous." And I was driving to Miami, so it was like an hour and a half drive. "Come back. Take the day off. I don't care. I'm also calling out of work to stay with you. You cannot go to work in this way." And so we spent the day at home. I called out of work and I had no sub plans. And I was like, fuck it, they can figure it out. And that day, I drank white wine with my mom on the couch and I decided to quit and immediately felt so liberated. And I applied to two places. I applied to be a poolside bartender at The Breakers on Palm Beach Island with my connection of my then boyfriend, Robbie, who is now my husband. And I applied to be an English teacher, which is what I was and was certified in at my old high school. And I got both interviews. And to this day, I wonder what it would have been like if I did take the job as the poolside bartender among the rich and famous. But I took the job as a teacher and I only lasted at that school for 3 months instead of the 8 months when I was at Shands Hospital. And again, felt so grateful. And then I loved my job at my high school until I didn't. And then as soon as I didn't, I was like, yeah, I'm out of here. I finished out the year just for the sake of my students, and for the sake of finances, and then was like, no, we're done. And from here on out, I know that this lesson that I'm going to impart on you and that I will do for myself, if there is a job that is causing you to wake up in the morning and panic or feel anxiety or have trouble breathing, if there's a job that you are in that is causing you to wake up multiple times in the middle of the night because you're sleeping so lightly, because you're anxious and you're checking the clock and you're dreading how little time you have left to sleep, if you are in a job where you are crying on Sunday nights because you don't want to go into work the next day, it is absolutely not worth it. Every skill, I bet every skill that you have in every job that you have ever had can be transferable to another job. And if it is so specialized, the job that you're currently in, I am confident that you can find a working environment that is a much better culture for your mental health and for you. And it got to the point where I was even like, I will quit my job teaching to work at a coffee shop and work minimum wage because I will be happier there and feel so much less stressed there and happily take on the cut in income in exchange for joy and looking out. And that's probably one of my biggest pieces of advice, because I don't want to waste, as Mary Oliver says, our one wild and precious life on dreading going to work and hating the minutes of being at work. Next, this is going to sound, this is going to be five and six, or six and seven together. This is going to sound rough on the surface, but I promise it's meaningful. Nothing matters and nobody cares. So, this is the mantra that got me through my second half of teaching when I was pregnant and when I was hating my job. Remember, I was hating my job for multiple reasons. Kids coming back from 2020, virtual learning, very different. Expectations from administration for teachers were very different. I was expected to essentially be a babysitter. I couldn't do my job. But also, I was pregnant with my first pregnancy after my first miscarriage, and I was highly anxious and could not be on my drugs. And I was highly, also, as a result, highly depressed because I chose to do an unmedicated pregnancy and I got off my, I had been off of my antidepressants and I was doing fine and I thought I would remain doing fine. And I was like, hey, I'm already off my antidepressants. Might as well keep it going. So lots of things contributing to that, but my mantra to get me through that was nothing matters and nobody cares. And that meant that if I got in trouble because I had too many kids that were failing because they weren't doing work or they were cheating, it didn't matter in the grand scheme of things. I mean, if and I was called in to like fluff their grades to make it look better so that our graduation rate looked better, nothing mattered. Like it's in 10 years, this is not going to matter. And nobody cares because when I'm spending 6 hours working on a lesson plan to try to make it engaging for my students or try to get them prepared for the SAT or the ACT, and they're not paying attention, nobody cares. Don't spend that time. And this can be very liberating for people in very specific situations. So I mean, I can see how this easily can bring someone down. You do matter, and what you do matters. And people do care about you. But when you're in a situation, like a life or death situation emotionally, and nobody's paying attention to you and you feel a loss of control, I found so much liberation in nothing matters and nobody cares. I'm just doing me and I'm happy, and that's what matters. So feel free to use that and steal that when you are in moments where all you're doing is focusing on what other people think of you and how other people perceive you and how your work looks for others. Nothing matters and nobody cares. Seven. No, eight. You can have your life plan, but surrender when things change. Always surrender because force, trying to force stop something from happening that is very clearly happening, coming through the floodgates, is going to be a massive waste of energy and likely a waste of time because it usually means something better is coming through, but you're too comfortable to relinquish control to let it come through. And the longer you hold on and force, the longer you are putting off something better coming to you. I had my life plan planned out from the time that I was, I don't know, fourth grade, probably. I want, sixth grade is when this really solidified. I am going, and this was like the Virgo in me. I'm going to go to the University of Florida, and then I'm going to get, oh, and I'm going to join a sorority, and I'm going to get my PhD in counseling psychology. And then I'm going to open up my own practice in South Florida and work predominantly with adolescents. And then I do not want to get married until I'm at least 30. And I do not want to have kids until I have an established practice. And that's if I choose to get married and if I choose to have kids. I was like, one max. And look at me now, you guys. Now, a snapshot of my life, if you don't know, I got married at 25. I did not get my PhD. I had my first child at 28, and now I work from home with an MLM, Young Living. Would I ever think that the girl that wanted to get her PhD in counseling psychology would end up with like a social media following selling essential oils to the MLM? Are you kidding? And I always look down upon, and I hate that I did this, but we all have our, we can all be forgiven, look down upon women who stayed home. I thought it was a waste of intellect that could be shared with the world, but now I understand it is an investment into your children who are going out into the world. It's a complete 180 to what my plan was, and it is absolutely perfect for me. And I find so much joy in my work, and I find so much joy in my marriage, and I find so much joy in my child, obviously. And if I had a podcast about this earlier. It was, what if our goals are getting in the way? And I mostly said, essentially, if what would have happened if at the end of college I saw that grad school, PhD wasn't happening? And then this teacher thing was happening. And then I was with this boyfriend that was like really good, but I didn't want to get married. What if I pushed him away because I didn't want to get married until I was at least 30? Would he have stayed? What if I stayed in Gainesville and worked and took a year and worked and worked up to my GRE so that I could get into grad school, so that I could get into my PhD program? And what it, and even though would have gotten into TFA and gotten my husband and gotten all of these things, what if I just like stayed held on? And all these other things were coming through, but I was like, I don't care. This is my plan. And my plan is the plan above all else. I wouldn't have any of this. So, as soon as I realized I missed the deadline to apply for grad school and I got in to teach for America, I said, all right, we're doing the damn thing. And when I was driving to school for my teaching job at my second school, and I was driving by the sunrise over the beautiful ocean, and I thought to myself, holy moly, I've been dating my boyfriend for 2 years and I'm still not annoyed with him. Could he be the one? And I didn't, drop the hint that I wanted this sapphire. I forgot where my brain was going with that. But can you imagine? I would have missed out on all of this. So when I, oh, I remember where I was going. I'm not editing this, so please enjoy this. When I was driving on my way to school and I said, wow, I haven't gotten sick of him after 2 years, which was usually my cutoff with boyfriends. I was like, okay. And when marriage talks started to get serious, I didn't say, no, I'm not getting married till 30. I said, okay. And when I started using essential oils, and finally someone said for the 20th time, and I finally listened, why don't you try to sell these things? I said, okay. And then people cared and wanted to do that, and they wanted to get oils from me. And then I was like, okay. And then look at, and then it all led to this. So, all to say, your plans are awesome. They are great roadmaps. They are goals. They are getting you going. But if something diverts you from that path and you realize in the moment, oh my gosh, this actually is not what is giving me life right now, scrap it and go towards the thing that is giving you life. I'm realizing now that 30 lessons with the way that I'm explaining things, since we're already at 50 minutes, is probably a little aggressive. So I'll probably do 10 and then like make some bonus episodes because I spend a lot of time on this list and they are good things. Okay, so going to number 9 for funsies. Do it for the story. Now, there are some things that I did in college that I was like, you know what? I'm young. And listening to the advice of others, which was you lose some freedom when you have kids, you lose some freedom when you get married. True. Embrace that young, wild, and free phase when you don't really have bills and you don't really have responsibilities and you can go wild and crazy. I did that. And I did it for the story. And there were moments where I was like, I'm not really into this, but this might be my last hurrah. And so I'm gonna go for it. And I'm gonna do it for the story to tell later and laugh at later. So no context to that, but take with it what you will. And to end this episode on a serious note, I'm not sure how I'm going to continue to do this. Yeah, maybe we'll make this just like a three-part series. Reward is always on the other side of fear. Always, always, always. If you are in a situation in your business, in your relationship, in your mental health, in trying to get something off the ground, in wanting to talk to somebody for the first time, in wanting to pitch yourself for something, in wanting to send in a piece of your art, whether that's writing and poetry or painting or music, and you're too scared, do it anyway. Step through that fear. The bigger the fear is that you have when it comes to chasing your dreams and what you want, the more you will be rewarded on the other side. And this I have seen for myself without fail, and have guided other people through without fail. I was fucking terrified to post a series on Instagram last year, a 6-part series where I explained what was always so obvious to me, which is that spirituality and Christianity can coexist. Where I explained that crystals and the Bible coexist. Crystals are in the Bible. Where I explained essential oils and Christianity. And I explained the moon phases and moon rituals and how they're a reflection of us being more in tune with the gifts of God and of nature. All these things that were so obvious to me because my woo-woo journey and my spiritual journey coincided with my Christian journey. And I have been a Christian since I was a child, but I didn't connect it until I was like 22. And I knew deeply that everything that I was doing was beautiful and not against Christ. And of course, like, everyone's different. Run it through the Holy Spirit, run it through your discernment. But I was terrified to post that because I knew that it was radical to a lot of people. And I posted it anyway because I was terrified. And what happened? A lot of people called me a heretic. A lot of people told me I was going to hell. A lot of people called me a satanic witch. A lot of people messaged me and said, you know what? You are not a good example of a Christian. But you know what else? A lot of women who were Christians, who had felt closer to Jesus and closer to the Holy Spirit when they were sitting in nature, when they were meditating with mala beads on scripture, when they were holding crystals that were created by God and sitting in contemplation, those individuals said, I have felt this way too, and I never wanted to say it out loud because I've always been taught that it's demonic, but you have given me the freedom and the permission to explore this and to thus deepen my relationship with Christ. And I thank you for that liberation. And what came of that? A lot of things, like the Woo Woo Bestie Facebook group happened around that time. A lot of followers followed me. A lot of wonderful conversations happened in my DMs. And a lot of people were able to overcome that hump that they had in their faith journey because of it. So if there is something in your life right now where you think about taking that step and you know it's the right step and you know it's the right step and it's a step in the right direction, but it fills you with fear, you don't know if you can actually do it and you don't know if you have the confidence to do it and if you don't know you have the knowledge to do it, but you know that's what you need to do for your own success, just do it. And like I say when we're shotgunning beers, disassociate for 7 seconds, walk up, start talking, and then come back into your body and just do it. Always reward on the other side. Now, I've been at this for 58 minutes, and I have 20 more lessons for you. And because I'm a natural storyteller, I suppose, I think this will last us another 2 hours, and I'm not going to put you through that, though I'm sure you love listening to my voice. I'm going to leave it at this for now, and I'm going to figure out maybe some bonus episodes with my lessons for turning 30. Maybe I'll wake up at 5 a.m. a couple of times this week and record some bonus episodes for you guys. But I hope in this first 10 lessons of Woo Woo Bestie, first 10 lessons of Susie Dean, you have found something that struck you, that resonated with you, that was relevant to your life right now, that you can take away and that you can put into practice immediately. And if any of those things are true, and if you follow any of these pieces of advice, and you have a beautiful story as a result, please find me on Instagram if you don't follow me already. WooWooBestie_Susie, S-U-Z-Y. DM me and tell me about it. Because I love making friends in my DMs. I love having a community on Instagram. I love hearing stories where I can celebrate you. I love celebrating people. Don't forget that you might already know this, you might not. We have a Woo Woo Bestie Facebook community group as well. And I will put it in the show notes, but you can also DM me on Instagram. Please just say hi. I love meeting new people. And it's almost at 2,000 members, which is so wild to me. And once we hit 2,000, I'm going to do some kind of fun giveaway. But it is a beautiful group of individuals who are non-judgmental, who are wise, who are curious, who are supportive and just knowledgeable and on all sides of the woo-woo spectrum. People who are like, I'm Christian, but I'm interested in this, but I've been taught that it's this, but how do you reconcile that? Ask that question. You will have 30 people come at you and tell you their stories and encourage you and encourage you out of love. And there are people in there that are like full-on Wiccans and have been Wiccans their whole life. And if that's you, then they can give you some Wiccan style, pagan style rituals that they do that I don't really know much about. And everyone in between. We're sharing recipes, we're sharing new and full moon rituals, we're sharing our new crystals that we're buying, we're celebrating each other, and it's beautiful. So if you think that you are also, if you are also the only woo woo bestie in your group, as I once was, and you would love some friends who are like-minded to be on this journey with you, to tap into with questions and ask advice and share your own wisdom, I would, and or want to post something that you want celebrated by others who would appreciate it in the same way that you do, please join our Woo Bestie Facebook group. And you have to make sure that you answer all of the admission questions, because I deny everyone who doesn't agree to be nice. And that's not an exaggeration. Anyway, until next time, I will probably see you a couple more times this week. I love you, and I hope you have the best day ever. I hope you enjoyed the wisdom, knowledge, and camaraderie that was shared today. If you enjoy this podcast and hanging out every week, make sure to subscribe to this show so that you never miss an episode. And if you really want to make my heart sing with joy, take a couple of minutes today to rate and review this show. In doing this, you're exposing the show to others that are just like you and just like me and would benefit from the information shared here as well. If we're not already connected, you can follow me on Instagram at WooWooBestie_Susie, S-U-Z-Y, where I share more about my plant magic journey, spirituality, and knowledge about essential oils. I've also linked our WooWoo Bestie Facebook group below if you're not already a part of it. It's a safe space for seekers of wisdom and those anywhere on their journey of spirituality. Ask your questions, share your moon rituals, learn from the collective wisdom of the woo-woo community. All are welcome, and I would love to see you there. I hope that you have the best week ever. Until next time.